Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Command Zone podcast. I'm DJ.
And I'm Murph.
Hey, you might have not have seen me for a while.
Yeah, welcome back, DJ.
It's summertime.
I'm glad to have you back.
At summertime, I come and just hang around the Command Zone and they let me film episodes. It's pretty great. You might have seen me from last summertime, or you might know me from the Jumbo Commander YouTube channel, but I'm super excited to cover these Commander Legends Battle for Baldur's Gate cards with you, Murph.
Yes, so we're doing In the 99 today. We've already covered basically everything Baldur's Gate related. We've covered multicolored legends, legends with backgrounds themselves.
We've done a live show yes. with Josh and Jimmy, and if some of the cards are going to be mentioned there. So if you're like, why didn't they talk about this cool card? It could be a background, or it could have been mentioned in the live show. We've got so much coverage going on for Commander Legends Battle for Baldur's Gate that you're going to find all of the best cards everywhere. So today, just covering in the 99,
yes.
covering the main set and the singles from the commander decks too.
Yeah. And if there's any cards that you find maybe are kind of cool, you might want to pick up, head on over to channelfireball.com/command. That's the place to go to pick up singles or maybe even sealed product. You can get the commander decks. Baldur's Gate is a really fun draft environment. So if you got some buddies around, you can get a Baldur's Gate box and draft it. I did it at Vegas pretty recently. It was a ton of fun. Really enjoyed it. But yeah, Channel Fireball has vetted sellers, real local game stores that are vying for your business. You know that they're going to be professional. The cards are going to be graded well. And channelfireball.com/command is just an overall great time to be buying cards.
Awesome.
Yes. And the other sponsor of this show is Ultra Pro. Ultra Pro has excellent, excellent products. They have deck boxes, sleeves, playmats. They've got the license with Wizards to put all the Magic the Gathering art onto the playmats, onto the deck boxes, onto the sleeves. So whenever you buy Ultra Pro products, you know you're going to be getting, first of all, excellent quality, but also you're going to be getting that awesome, awesome art that can really like pull your battlefield together and really theme it up in your own personalized way.
Awesome job. Those are some great sponsors.
Yeah.
But we also have you guys
yes.
helping out the Command Zone. We have a Patreon, and one of the perks of being a member of our patron is, being in the Discord, chatting with people, getting to see episodes. Yeah. Getting to see episodes of stuff early.
Oh yeah.
But of course, we always shout out one lucky patron every single episode. And this episode is dedicated to
Christopher T. Shepherd.
Christopher.
You rock.
Thanks, Christopher.
Yeah. Also, one more thing before we get into it. We do have a Kickstarter still going. There's not much time left, but it is for our awesome, awesome Before the Storm playmats.
Oh my gosh, Majestic Tiger playmats.
Majestic what? Tiger playmats. So a lot of our previous playmats have been like after a battle or right before the battle, but this depicts a very cool like lightning tiger and an archer getting ready to battle. Awesome, awesome art. I think it's one of the most beautiful playmats that I've ever seen.
I love it.
I love it a lot.
It's so cool.
But anyway, the Kickstarter is winding down. We only make these to sell on the Kickstarter, and then once that Kickstarter is done, no more orders. We're never making this playmat ever again. So if you want it, go on over, lock in your order right now at Kickstarter.
Very cool. Yeah, I want one of these. This is really awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay, but let's talk about in the 99, cards that go in all of your commander decks from Commander Legends, Battle for Baldur's Gate.
Yes.
I want to find some cards to slot into my existing decks. I think that we're going to do first is kind of break down some broader categories for some organization. So let's start off with one of my favorite categories, these larger mechanics, Myriad.
Oh, yeah. Myriad's a ton of fun. So Myriad is, if something has Myriad, then when you attack with that creature, you make token copies that are attacking every other opponent. And then those tokens will get exiled at end of combat.
So this is built for multiplayer.
Yes. It does absolutely nothing in one-on-one. You want to be playing this in multiplayer, and it's a reasonably powerful ability.
So if I have more opponents, I make more tokens.
Yes.
So you're saying that like in a, I should be doing this in a six-player game.
I don't know what you're doing.
Seven-player game.
Six and seven-player commander
eight-player
games.
Eight-player game.
I don't want to be playing in pods with you if you're playing.
It becomes more powerful in bigger pods.
It does, actually.
But Myriad is super powerful because it scales with multiplayer. I like that a lot. There's also known synergies with Myriad too. Like if you have a way to multiply these tokens or manipulate them in some way or end your turn to keep them around or ways to double up triggers, there are ways to get extra tokens. And there's all sorts of cool corner case scenarios with Myriad. So just know that there are sneaky things that you can do with this mechanic as well.
Yes. We're not going to go over all of those. We're mostly going to be focusing on the individual cards, but there are cool things you can do with Myriad.
Yeah. I think that when we talk about in the 99, we're thinking about, well, does it fit in your generic deck? Not necessarily the one deck that can really manipulate these cards specifically.
Yeah, I think that's an important distinction to make because oftentimes when we're talking about cards, people will be in the comments like, oh no, I think this card's good because it slits into
I have deck this very X. specific deck.
And that's great. That's awesome. Like that's why Magic cards are printed so that they can go in all sorts of different types of decks and there's different cards for different scenarios, right?
Yeah.
So we're just we're reviewing these cards based on like overall power level. How well do they go in generic decks?
Yeah, we're guiding you to put these cards in your deck.
Yes.
But that one person that has that very special Myriad deck and knows all the corner cases, they don't need our advice. They already have this card.
Yes.
They've already purchased it from Channel Fireball and it's in their deck right now.
What's in the note card, too? Though.
Oh, yeah, this card. All the Myriad cards.
All the Myriad cards.
One thing to note, too, is that Myriad stacks.
Yes.
We've seen Myriad, and we've seen the power of it, so we do know a little bit more about this mechanic. We've seen it on Blade of Selves, which is a reprint, which is also in this set. Blade of Selves is a two-mana equipment. Equipped creature has Myriad.
Yeah.
It has equip four. So we've seen Myriad before, and so we kind of have some tools to evaluate it. Murph, I just think that Myriad in general is powerful.
Yes.
And I think that
I would agree.
All of the Myriad creatures in this set are worth looking at, honestly.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty reasonable take. I like the stuff that gives Myriad to other creatures because maybe the creature that already exists with Myriad doesn't have any cool abilities on it. Maybe it's just like pretty bland, like from the C15 decks. The creatures weren't usually great when they had Myriad, but stuff like Blade of Selves or any creatures with cool abilities already on it, I think are definitely things that we want to be looking at.
All right, let's take a look at one of those creatures with cool abilities. Let's talk about the Battle Angels of Tyr.
Oh, that's cool. So this one's a 2WW creature Angel Knight. It's got flying and Myriad. When it deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. If that player has more cards in hand than each other player, then you create a treasure token. If that player controls more lands than each other player, then you gain 3 life if that player has more life than each other player.
Murph, I think this card is so good.
You think this card's so good?
I think it's so good.
I mean, okay.
So how many four drops do you have in your repertoire that can just smash in for 12 damage?
That is true. Like, it is damage. It's not just the effects. Like,
smash!
4 mana, it has flying. Like, that can't be counted out. You'll almost always have somebody that can be attacked with this because everybody having something that can profitably block a 4/4 flyer in the air doesn't happen super often, right?
Yeah, so I feel like this opens up lines of attack so you can get it in. And the trigger. Like, the trigger's just great. If you draw a card off of this, like, you play Moldrifter, like you play other cards that just enter the battlefield and draw you a single card. If this triggers to draw you a card and deals 12 damage, maybe gets a treasure, and you can keep triggering this over and over again, like that's, the ceiling on this thing is insane.
Yeah, I'm a little bit lower on it in that.
You're lower than my ceiling? Murph!
Look, I don't think that this is a bad card. In fact, I do think it's a good card, but it specifies that the opponent has to have more than, not equal to or more than, for example. So they have to have the most lands in the game, including against you. They have to have the most cards in hand, including you. So there is like a limit. There's a cap.
You're right. If I'm winning the game, I don't get triggers off of my angel. If I have the most cards in hand, the most life, and the most lands on the battlefield, and I'm smashing in for 12,
that's
I'm okay.
True,
I'm okay also, in that situation.
I might have seven cards
in hand. Do you really need to win more that much, Murray? No.
It's not win more. I might not have the cards in hand that I want, even if it's seven cards.
But also, do you think the kind of deck that plays an angel on four, mm-hmm. you know, might be the kind of deck that does deploy to the battlefield pretty well and might be a little bit low on cards,
yeah.
is maybe playing white, so might not have as many lands on the battlefield as another player?
Yeah. Definitely being in white, I think, is very helpful because they might not have as many lands in play. Although another card in this set kind of nullifies that, but we'll get to that later.
but you know what, Murph? I see what you mean, that I'm envisioning this card on turn four.
Yeah.
Or ramped on turn three. But smashing in early on, getting those triggers, doing that damage, pressuring your opponents, and you're more thinking of like, well, there's tons of states in the game.
Yep.
There's tons of times that this angel can come down, and there's maybe a bunch of times that it's just not going to perform as well as some other creatures that are more reliable that just enter the battlefield and have a trigger.
Yeah.
I still think it's good, though.
Yeah, I don't think it's awful later in the game. I just think it's like the expectations have to be tempered with what you're going to get from it, I think.
I was hyping them up too much.
Maybe a little bit.
Okay. I'll pull it back a little. I'll pull it back a little bit. Okay. I came out the gate strong.
Here's another one that we can hype up.
Yeah. Let's talk about another Myriad card. It's Legion Loyalty. 6 white for an enchantment. That's 8-man enchantment.
That's a lot.
Creatures you control have Myriad.
Holy moly.
Woo!
So I like this card a lot. I think that 8 mana is a lot, but this is pretty darn powerful because all of your other creatures will have Myriad, and that could be anything with Enter the Battlefield effects, right?
I mean, play good. Hopefully you're playing good creatures that will like give you value as you apply it. And by the way, we talked about how we have this prior experience from Blade of Self. So mm-hmm. we know that giving things Myriad can be great, and giving yeah. your whole team Myriad can be phenomenal. Murph, I read things on the internet. I know it's inadvisable, but I do. I read things on the internet.
I'm so sorry for you.
and there are people saying that this is the white Craterhoof.
Okay, that's interesting.
Do you have opinions about that?
Okay, so Craterhoof, you usually play it. You have to have at least a board. Otherwise, Craterhoof does mostly nothing. I guess if they're at like, what, 5, you could play a Craterhoof and attack with it. That was a nice paper airplane.
Thank you. I haven't thrown a paper off the desk in like 6 months, so years. I'm excited about it. Yeah,
it's been 8 years.
What are you talking about?
Anyway, so Craterhoof, you have to have a board in order for it to be effective. Same True. Thing with this. You also have to have a board to be effective.
Absolutely right. Okay, but we can assume that if you're playing either a Craterhoof or this card, you're in a creature-based strategy. Yeah. Hopefully you have some sort of board. Mm-hmm. Obviously, let's take the other end of the spectrum. No board, it's bad. If you have a gigantic board, both of them can win the game.
Yeah.
You know, Myriad will multiply your creatures out, dealing all of that damage to everyone, giving mm-hmm. you tons of triggers, doing crazy stuff. Craterhoof just pumps everything and gives a trample. At the top end, they both win the game. I think that it has to do with in that middle ground, right? Mm. Those not ideal scenarios where you just got, you know, 3 or 4 creatures out. Maybe you even got some good creatures, but not enough to really be that finisher where you kill everything.
Yeah, I think this actually shines more than Craterhoof in that like middle of the road thing, because with Craterhoof, if you're like, I don't want to win the game right now. I don't want to take somebody out right now. Well, not that you don't want to win the game, but I can't win the game.
But basically, you're saying that if you have a modest board state, you play the Craterhoof and you get enough to only kill Murph.
Yes.
But not. But then you're kind of left open to Jimmy and Ashlyn.
Exactly. Like you might just die in the crackback because you just demonstrated that you have the ability to kill somebody. So people are going to be scared of you, and rightfully so.
Sometimes it's good to kill a player.
Yeah, sometimes it
and
is.
Myriad, and this thing can't do that.
Yeah, that is true, because the Myriad says it has to go at, you make tokens for each other
spread
player.
Spread it out.
You got to spread it out. So with Craterhoof, you can just be like, big board going straight at you, take out that threat, then we're good. This card doesn't have that flexibility, but I think in the like middle of the road case scenario where you have a few creatures on the board and then you play this, I think it's still very good.
Mm. I think that what it gives you is a little bit more staying power than Craterhoof. Mm-hmm. Like the scenario that you described has me tapped out killing you.
Yeah.
You know, Actually, I said that, but that's fine. but just imagine you have some other creatures, and even though you don't kill anyone, they help you stabilize a little bit more. Like, yeah. Just imagine you're playing Solitude, and you that you know you get two more copies of that, and suddenly you're taking out two creatures.
You've got that.
Aerial Extortionist. You know, you're bouncing other creatures, exiling them, putting your opponents back. There's so many different creatures that you can have. I'm a big fan of Righteous Valkyrie.
Mm-hmm.
This is 3 mana for a 2/4 flying angel cleric. Whenever another angel or cleric enters the battlefield under your control, you gain life equal to that creature's toughness.
Yep.
So two more of these coming on the battlefield will have you gaining a ton of life. And if your life total is 7 or more, creatures you control get +2/+2.
Mm-hmm.
So this could theoretically have your team buff +6/+6.
Oh, that's so good.
So it feels like a lot of these cards help you stabilize more. Like, that card is just a generic, like, oh, hey, I'm going to gain some life.
Yeah.
That's stabilization, you know, compared with some of these other things that can take out creatures. Like, I can see a medium attack suddenly having you, like, make it around to the next turn.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do it again.
Yeah.
And again.
Yeah.
And again.
Yeah. I think it provides just so much value, where something like Craterhoof doesn't really provide value. It provides like a big one-shot laser cannon.
Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing. We know about Myriad from Blade of Selves, but we also know about like flicker decks, like extra ETBs. Panharmonicons have been in decks over and over again. And so if we have things that prey on that, like just imagine Thrag Tusk.
Yeah.
Oh. You know, you just gain, I'm going to gain a bunch of extra life and I'm going to leave beasts behind.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You got to sacrifice the Thrag Tusks in order to make that happen. Cause I believe the tokens exile with Myriad.
Ah.
But
Thrag Tusk just says when Thrag Tusk leaves the battlefield.
I forgot. That's Thrag Tusk is so good.
Murph, weren't you Thrag playing Tusk. Thrag Tusk Restoration Angel back in the day? Because I was.
I totally forgot about that. No, I do remember that meta. I was a new player at the time.
But here's the thing. There are, granted, we are talking about the top end type of cards, you know, but there are, like, Archon of Cruelty exists.
That's so good.
Grey Merchant of Asphodel exists. Kakusho, I've Kakushoed. Even though the copies get Legend to rule themselves out, you still get all of these triggers draining everyone. Heck.
Terror of the Peaks. Holy moly. Yeah, with something like Grey Merchant or Terror of the Peaks, you can very easily turn this card into, okay, now it's basically Craterhoof-esque. I'm now killing people. I'm now taking people out because of the amount of value that I'm gaining and the amount of damage and life loss that I'm able to dole out. So, does it go in every deck? Probably not, but...
No, I think you need, like, I think you need a creature-based strategy. I think that you need a critical mass of creatures.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Like, there are going to be some cards that finish better than it,
yeah.
You know, and it depends on your deck. You know, you might say, hey, you know, my Akroma's Memorial or Akroma's Vengeance or all those other Akroma things, they might work a little bit better for your deck,
yeah.
You know, and that could be true. But here's the thing, though, even with Craterhoof, even with all these other finishers, I just get excited about this Myriad effect. I get excited about Legion Loyalty.
Yeah, like, do you get...
It is so commandery.
Do you get excited when you play Craterhoof?
No!
I've
cut Craterhoof from so many decks because it's just Craterhoof.
I still play it, but it's not ever something that's like, yes, this is super exciting or very fun for the table. It's like, okay, yeah, I get it. It's a win con. You gotta have win cons in your deck, but it's
Myriad,
not...
Yeah, myriading your entire board to just crack into everyone.
It's probably extra triggers. To track, though.
Oh, man. Pain to track. It is a joy to track. A joy. I'm a big fan, mostly because I think that this is commandery.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. I really do like that. It's a big enchantment that does really, really cool things in a color that doesn't really have a ton of top end, which I like.
Cool. Okay. So again, check out all of the Myriad cards because I think it's great.
Yeah.
Do a search for Myriad. Look at them all. Fantastic. But those are the ones that we're focusing on. We're going to move on to another category. I've lumped together... Dragons.
Yes.
I mean, it's Dungeons and Dragons.
Dungeons and Dragons.
They're dragons. There are dragons in this set.
Yeah. However, there are 5 very important Elder Dragons that we want to talk about today, right, DJ?
Absolutely. So why don't you run through the 5 dragons because they share a lot, and then we can find out whether these are going to fit in the 99 of your decks.
Yeah. So all of these dragons, whenever they deal combat damage to a player, you roll a d20 and do an effect. So the red one is Ancient Copper Dragon. That's 6 mana for a 6/5. Roll a d20 to make treasure tokens. Ancient Gold Dragon is the white one. 7 mana, 7/10. Roll a d20, make 1/1 flyers equal to the results. The blue one is 8 mana, 8/8. Roll when it deals damage to draw cards equal to the result, and you have no max hand size for the rest of the game. The black one is 7 mana. You roll a d20 on hit, and when that happens, you get creature cards with mana cost X or less equal to the dice roll. And then the Ancient Bronze Dragon's the green one, 7 mana, 7/7. When it deals damage, put X plus one counters on up to two creatures.
So I'm incredibly lucky. So I'm going to get 20 treasures, 20 flying 1/1 dragons every time.
So that's how you play this card. All right. Just get lucky. If you can get lucky enough to roll a 20 every time. I think we literally mentioned this last time when we were doing the Forgotten Realms.
Cards. Just be lucky.
We were talking about like these dice rolling cards. Just be lucky. And that'll get you there.
Solved. Advice given. But okay. Well, if we look at it, a 10.5
yes.
is what we can expect, because sometimes you'll roll a one and sometimes you'll roll a 20. Mm-hmm. On average, 10.5 things.
Yeah.
10.5 treasures, 10.5 cards, 10.5 1/1 flying dragons.
These all seem pretty good.
It seems great, but let's take a step back here.
Okay.
In order to get these 10.5 things, we have to play a 6-8 drop dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Have it sit on the battlefield for an entire turn as everyone says, well, what is that now? And you get out your d20 ready to roll. Yeah. And then it has to attack and make contact with a person.
Yeah.
These effects are so powerful. Like 10 1/1s on the board, 10 cards. It's so powerful that people can't let that hit them.
Mm.
And so I have a feeling that these dragons are going to be like the definition of dice to removal.
Mm. So you think that's there just all like you got to kill on sight. Otherwise,
are you going to let one of these hit you?
I mean, no, no, I don't want to. But maybe if you run enough creatures that you must kill on sight, one of them gets through. Like that's the way of Commander, right?
Murph suggests running all 5 dragons in your deck.
Run all 5 of them. Problem solved.
I think that you need a very specific type of deck because these are so expensive. You know, 7 mana is a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult. You're gonna get there eventually, but it's in the way late game, and you can't have very many 7 drops.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering,
it's gotta be 7 drop, and you gotta wait a turn, or have something else that gives it haste, other sort of synergy, and then make sure you hit contact with it before it gets removed.
So I'm wondering if this makes it into the generic good stuff deck, if you should put it into your 99, or whether this belongs in specific dragon synergies or, you know, big ramp, you know, crazy deck, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, which one?
Much more narrow.
What do you think is the best one? Like, what is your order of these cards? Like, all right. How would you rank them?
Well, I think that Ancient Bronze Dragon, Ancient Copper Dragon, the one that creates treasures.
The red one.
I think that's the best. Mostly though, because it's 6 mana, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I can see myself casting it at 6 mana. Mm-hmm. So I think that is far and away the one that people should be looking at. I believe it's the most expensive one, so people are looking at it.
Yeah.
And I do think it's the best by a lot.
What about the rest of them?
Oh, Murph.
Okay. So we got the white one. That's
all right. Next. Okay. Number one is the red one. Number two is the white one. I think a lot of 1/1 dragons is really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Then number three, I have Ancient Silver Dragon. I love drawing cards, but 8 mana is that's a lot.
Yeah,
that's the blue one. Then we have Ancient Brass Dragon. That's the black one. Mm-hmm. Reanimating stuff is fine, but, you know, just hit reanimate something. I mean, we have, like, you have Rakshasa Death Dealer, I think, is 6 mana.
Rakshasa Debaser, yeah.
Debaser, yeah. Just attacks.
Yeah.
And you get something from their graveyard.
Yeah, there's a 9 mana one that Post Malone played where it's just like, get everything from all graveyards.
Oh, Rise of the Dark Realms?
Rise of the Dark Realms, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So, I don't know. I feel like there's better reanimation out there. And then Ancient Bronze Dragon is very green.
And boring.
It's just like,
pretty boring.
Get bigger. It's just like, I'm so much bigger for next turn.
So glad the white one wasn't gain that much life.
Oh.
I would have laughed so hard if it was roll d20, gain that much life.
No, the one ones is good. I think the one ones are cool.
Yeah.
What do you think of my order?
I would agree for the most part. I'd swap the white and the blue one. I think the blue one is better than the white one. Like, I think it has more, like, obvious
drawing cards scenarios. Is definitely better, but
yeah.
It's eight over seven. They're all so expensive.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I think that I have to have my expectations tempered a little bit because I think that it's going to be hard to cast them.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think you're right that most of them you don't really just like jam in your average deck. You totally can. It'll be fine. But as far as like optimization goes, maybe just the red one.
Play them if you're in a dragon deck. Play them if you love them. If you have the red one, go for it. But it might, you might, if you're trying to actually generate treasures, you might want to try a Dockside Extortionist or something like that, you know, something a little bit more reliable.
My name's DJ. I recommend playing Dockside Extortionist. Real original.
Murph, take it out of context. Just Jessica's Will. No.
Just play Jessica's Will. That's how you generate mana.
When you, if you want to generate treasures, there are more reliable ways of doing it than playing a six drop and having to hit someone and rolling dice.
Yes. But that being said, fun cards. I like them a lot.
Okay, perfect. Okay, but hang on. Yes. I know that these are the flashiest, the biggest of dragons, but I actually think that there's a lot more dragon to talk about.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I specifically want to shout out two drop dragons. I want to talk about Reckless Barbarian and Scaled Nurturer.
Okay.
Why don't you give Reckless Barbarian a read?
Oh, yeah. So Reckless Barbarian is a one in a red. It's a creature, Dragon Barbarian. And you can sacrifice it to add red to your mana pool, and it's a 2/2. So why do you like this, DJ?
Okay.
I know why I like it, but I want to hear your thoughts.
So dragons as a tribe are very top heavy. We've just seen a ton of 6, 7, 8 drop dragons. There are so many big, chonky dragons out there that if you were to make your cool dragon deck and lay it out in front of you, you're going to have so much up at the top end and no support at the bottom end.
Yeah.
You're going to have very few 2-drops. And so you'll fill it in with other stuff. But this is a 2-drop dragon. And it's a 2-drop dragon that when it's irrelevant, you cash it in to get your 8-drop dragon into play.
Oh, yeah.
So not only does it fit into your curve, it one-time ramps you into the bigger, more relevant dragon that you need.
Yeah.
And dragons have synergies. Just think about Scourge of Valkis that triggers when dragons enter the battlefield. Think about Dragon Tempest. Think about Lathless, Dragon Queen.
That's so good.
Think about the Ur-Dragon making this only cost one single red mana.
Ooh, baby.
And then sacrificing to generate you mana.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And by the way, so just throwing in a little bit of advice with Scaled Nurturer, a 2-mana dork, blah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We have Birds of Paradise, but the fact that this is a dragon means that everything that I said is true. You know, Scourge of Valkis triggers it. The Ur-Dragon makes it only cost a single green. You know, Lathless creates a dragon with it. So I think that you should look out for creatures in your tribe that break the norm.
You know?
And the norm for dragons is big, powerful, flying, big thing. And every so often, if you can get a little 2/2 that provides some utility, like that's important.
Yeah, because you do have to have like a low end. Because I know that from personal experience when playing a dragon's deck, it's oftentimes ramp, play out all your early pieces, like not creatures. And people are always scared of the dragon deck. So they're almost always going to like hammer you with damage. By the time you get your first dragon or two out, you've already lost like a pretty good chunk of life. So even something as small as having something that could deter those attacks.
Get your like, 2-drop out so that Craig doesn't infect you and that you can attack someone's planeswalker.
That's all I want to do. I just don't want to die immediately to infect. Specifically with the Reckless Barbarian, though, I like this card a lot, aside from it being like a dragon tribal card, because of that ability to sac for red, and it's a colorless and a red to cast. I think this is good in like higher powered commander decks. I've been playing a good bit of CEDH, which
you're now our CDH expert.
I am not a CDH expert.
Everyone at Murph wants CDH advice.
By a long shot. But that being said, like I have a Kroxa deck, and so at least I know what that deck wants. And
oh my gosh. So Kroxa escapes for red, black, difficult to cast, and escapes by exiling cards. You sacrifice this thing, you create the 2 red that you need, and it's a card to escape to exile from your graveyard.
It's a card to escape. It's a card for like ending the World Gorger Animate Dead Loop in your graveyard, which I think is very good. But most importantly, I think it's good because we have cards like Blood Pet, which is just a black and sacrifice for a black. But
Skirk Prospector,
yeah,
a goblin that can create a red.
But those Wild those are, Panther.
I mean, people play Lotus Petal.
Yes.
Lotus Petal is a 0 mana artifact and just like gives you a mana. And so the idea of being able to save up mana for bigger turns or be able to, you know, storm, chain cards into other cards and all the, more mana could mean that this has some more playability than I first thought.
Yeah. And I think the big thing for this is that it's a colorless and a red. It's not like 2 red mana. Because in high-powered commander games, you oftentimes have an abundance of colorless mana. You've got your mana vaults, you got your grim monoliths, all these things that will help provide colorless mana, but oftentimes you are restricted solely because of the amount of colored mana that you need to use. So I think that this can be like pushed out super early in games, oftentimes turn 1, turn 2, basically at any point when you need it, and just turn that into actual colored mana that you can use for other things.
Do you know what you should try?
What?
Dockside Extortionist. It's like, it like stores up mana too, but like sometimes more than... Moving on
to the next one. I don't know if you would believe this, DJ, but Dockside Extortionist, very good in CEDH. I know it's
so
crazy.
So much faster. Okay.
So crazy.
All right. All right. We're talking about mana.
Okay.
Let me convince you.
Okay.
Murph is very suspicious
of this card. I'm all ears.
He's very suspicious of this. Okay. Suspicious of this card. Okay. Because it's a 3-mana rock. Okay. Don't turn off the episode. I know that people are moving away from 3-mana rocks. They dislike them.
Has to do a lot, DJ.
Me as well. Okay. There are 3-mana rocks that synergize with dragons. I want to talk about Carnelian Orb of Dragonkind. 2 and a red for an artifact. Tap, add red. If that mana is spent on a dragon creature spell, it gains haste until end of turn. So,
DJ, you think this is a good card?
A 3-mana mana rock is acceleration, correct?
Yes.
We used to run them all the time. Remember back in the day, Murph?
I used to run manaless and I liked it.
Yes. Okay. So, all right, this is playable. But then there are sometimes you need dragons that have haste. Uh-huh. We just mentioned 5 elder dragons and we were like, oh, do you know it'd be great if this thing had haste so we could actually connect with our opponents? There are sometimes big chunky dragons you want them attacking earlier. And so the idea that this can give them haste could be the utility that you need.
I would rather just run like Lightning Greaves.
Okay.
Dragon Tempest.
Okay. You are correct.
Okay.
Those are both good cards too.
Yes.
But here's the thing. This does 2 things. So if you are playing this on 3, then you're accelerating mana because it produces a mana.
Okay.
It also grants haste, which means that you are attacking a turn earlier. So it's almost like you're accelerating 2 turns, 1 for the mana and 1 for the haste. A 3-mana mana rock that accelerates 2 things in your dragon specific deck. 2 turns, that's better than just granting haste or just adding extra mana.
I mean, it's not exactly, yes, you do get to attack a turn earlier, but I don't think it's accelerating you by 2. Besides, even if it did.
But it is, no, if your whole goal is to attack with your dragon, it is accelerating you 2 turns.
DJ, we don't even run Worn Power Stone that much.
You're going to hate on Worn Power Stone now? Get in the comments, all my Worn Power Stone people, and call out Murph.
Worn Power Stone is a better card than this card. 100%.
But, well, hang on. Worn Power Stone, you are correct.
Yes.
But, like, Worn Power Stone still opens your dragon up to removal, whereas this can get your Elder Dragon in, and then you can roll d20s.
I don't know. I just rather run like lower mana value ramp cards and also just other things with haste that already synergize. Like Lightning Greaves also gives shrouds. Dragon Tempest also gives haste and does damage when dragons come into play. Put in like Swiftfoot Boots or like whatever your other favorite haste enabler is. Not this. And you'll be set.
No one tell Murph that also a bunch of dragons already come with haste. Okay. Moving on.
I don't know why you like this card.
Moving on to another category. I want to talk about Gates.
Oh, okay. I like
Gates. We are in Commander Legends Battle for Baldur's Gate. And we have brand new Gates.
I'm so glad that the designers were like, this is Baldur's Gate. What should we have?
Gate. Yeah.
Done. Ship it.
All right. So we have the literal Baldur's Gate.
Yes.
The Cabal Coffers of Gates. We will read that card, but we also have extra gates. And so I want you to read Baldur's Gate, and I want you to think in your mind, are gates a thing now?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we got Baldur's Gate, a legendary land that's also a gate. You tap for a colorless or pay 2 tap at X mana of any one color, where X is the number of other gates you control.
Cabal Coffers is super powerful. It's very expensive. If we're playing a gate deck, this can produce a ton of mana, not to mention gates help fix us.
Yes.
Is this the new budget mana base?
Like, are you saying that because of this, people should run like a lot of gates and that's their budget mana base?
We're not going to go in and mention all of the tiny synergies of like, you could run Guild Summit, you could run Gates Ablaze, you could run Gatebreaker Ram.
Yeah, but you're saying that people might be considering that now.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say no, just because every single gate enters tapped.
This one doesn't.
That's true.
Lawyered!
I've been foiled immediately with my point. No, but
most, a lot of them do. Most of
the gates enter the battlefield tapped, like a very large majority.
And if you're running, they're 20 gates. And so if you're running like 20 gates when a huge portion of your mana base enters tapped, there is a cost.
Yeah.
But is that cost worth it? I mean, like, think about the another budget mana base. How many of those lands enter the battlefield?
Yeah, I mean, you would get access to this. You would get access to Maze's End. But I don't think that having those as potential, like, a mana ramp slash alternate win cons are worth the tempo that having that many tap lands will, like, get you. Like, I think that if you are in a five-color mana base, you pick up all of the triple lands from, like, Khans of Tarkir and Shards of Alara block, and a bunch of basics, and then pick a couple other untapped lands that are cheap that you think are cool, like Command Tower or something like that. And I think that that will provide you a much better mana base, a much more consistent mana base, and one that won't fall behind because of the sheer amount of Enter the Battlefield tapped lands you have. Because if most of your mana base is tapped lands, you're basically playing a turn behind everybody else.
We talk about how important it is to have mana ramp.
Yeah.
Like, we're squabbling over, like, you know, well, does haste get you attacking faster?
Yeah.
Was one mana ramp, no, three mana rocks are bad, two mana rocks are hard. If your land enters the battlefield tapped and you can't cast your spell,
yeah,
that undoes all of the other work that you've done by putting in a ramp into your deck. Mm-hmm. And so I think the tap lands are something that you seriously need to look at.
Yeah.
So, conclusion, this doesn't even touch traditional high-powered mana bases.
No, not
even close. Even budget-conscious like people focusing and playing basics, this doesn't measure up. But if you like the style, if you're going for synergies, give it a try, but accept the fact that you might be a turn behind.
Exactly. I think that's a very good way to look at it.
Awesome. Okay, we have covered the main categories. Now we're going to talk about individual cards. But before we do, we're going to hear a word from our sponsors.
Don't go away.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today. The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything.
I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
All right, everyone, welcome back. We're going to talk about some individual cards, and we're going to start with some white cards.
Yeah, I think white has some of the spiciest cards of the set.
Oh my gosh, let's talk about one of the best ones.
All right, we got Archivist of Ogma. It's a 1 and a white, 2 mana, flash creature. Whenever an opponent searches their library, you gain a life and draw a card. It's a 2/2.
That's great.
That's really good, yeah.
2 mana draw card is a staple. Like, we play Elvish Visionary and Fibblethip and Spirited Companion and all of these other things.
You play those.
You don't play those?
Elvish Visionary, maybe. But even so, like, drawing cards is good.
Those are played in Commander. People play those.
People do play those, yeah.
Not Murph, though. Hating Fibblethip. I'm getting so much not sass hating on my right over here.
This is a good card. I'm not disagreeing with
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
This could draw 2 cards.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you play it, you'll usually like flash it out and like get somebody with it, right?
Yeah.
It'll be like, gotcha, draw a card.
Well, how often? Let's figure it out. Because how often are you going to get someone? How often are you going to draw a card? In your meta, in our meta, how often do people search their library?
Quite a bit. Because I have the fortunate job of editing Commander gameplay for a living, and so I go into painstaking detail about how often people will tutor, right? Because we have to do like a whole little animation.
You're
for
the
it,
exact
like,
right fetch person land, for
brackets.
This. So, how often does it happen?
Per person,
sure,
or just overall?
Yeah, let's just say per person.
Yeah, per person, it's like 4 or 5.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, so fetch lands, ramping, what else? Tutor, like actual tutors.
Yeah. It could easily be more.
Like, wow.
I would err on the side of maybe a little bit more than 4.
Murph is saying that a little bit more than 4. So he's saying that you're going to draw at least 15 cards when you play this 2-drop. 15 cards for a 2-drop?
I mean,
it's amazing.
Perhaps,
but here's the thing. Okay, but let's just say that like it only gets you a couple cards, 2 or 3 cards, before it gets caught up in a board wipe or someone realizes it's gaining you too much value and it dies.
That's still good.
That's one of the best white card draw out piece out there, right?
Yeah, that's still very, very good.
It's phenomenal. So like,
it's got life gain on it too. Like, that makes it even more white, right?
You know what? You're right. You know, if it feels like a color break because we're drawing cards, just throw some life gain on it and you're good.
Yeah.
I personally love this card. I think that it's one of the best creatures that in white that generates card advantage, specifically because it's so quick to cast because it's flashy and it only costs 2 mana.
Yeah. Easy to hold 2 mana up.
And right? Also, are you going to like not ramp because of this? Or are you going to let me draw a card?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think like with something like Rhystic Study, where you're like, oh man, well, I just have to slow down my game plan, pay the one, or that's what you should be doing.
Why are you looking at me?
I'm not looking at you. I'm looking at the camera.
Oh, look at them.
I'm hoping that Josh Lee Kwai is watching this.
Does he not pay the one?
Oh, you didn't watch the last Game Nights?
Of course I watched the last Game Nights. Of course I did.
He did not pay the one for like 20 cards in a row. The point is that with Rhystic Study, it just happens so often that people are oftentimes scared of it and they will be paying the one. Whereas with like this, it triggers reasonably often, but not so often that people are going to be like, oh, well, I'm just not going to fetch. I'm just not going to rampant growth or something like that. Right? Because I would still do that into this.
Sounds great. I'm gonna play it. I'm gonna draw 15 cards according to Murph, and it's gonna be an amazing card.
It's a really good card, though.
All right,
I can't wait to play it.
I want to follow up with another amazing 2-drop. Uh-huh. This is Deep Gnome Terramancer, 1 and a white for a 2/2 gnome wizard with flash. It's got Mold Earth. Whenever one or more lands enter the battlefield under an opponent's control without being played, you may search your library for a planes card, put it on the battlefield tapped, then shuffle. Do this only once per turn. Murph, how often do lands enter the battlefield when they're not played?
A lot. This, I mean, kind of similar with the last one. People play fetch lands a lot.
Fetch,
right?
Lands again.
Yep.
Tutoring lands onto the battlefield.
Rampant growth.
Solemn Simulacrum.
Yeah.
This happens all the time. And again, this only has to trigger once.
Yeah.
And it's suddenly competitive with all the other white ramp out there. And if it happens twice, it's insane.
Yeah.
People play Loyal Warhound, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's this card and the previous one are both like pretty similar with what they're trying to do. It's like one gotcha, and then they'll stick around and continue to provide that effect until somebody's like, eh, you've had enough of that, or just gets hit by a board wipe or something like that. But I think with this one, you're much happier getting a land in a play tapped than just a card, right? Because I think that's much more powerful.
For sure. I know you say they look similar, but like the one's a halfling cleric and the other's a gnome wizard.
They're 2 mana 2/2 with flash from the same
set. I know they're both short and bedecked in robes, but you really got to respect the halfling versus the gnome.
This whole episode is DJ being like, here's words, I'm going to put them into your mouth. Just, oh, there you go. it is kind of surprising that they put both of these in the same set, because
they're both so good.
They're both so good. They feel similar, and I'm excited to play both of them.
Okay, we already had this discussion with the Archivist of Ogma, but for Deep Gnome Terramancer,
yeah.
Are you going to not ramp if this is on the battlefield?
Probably not. I might think twice about it with, like, sometimes you'll have a late game rampant growth, and you'll be like, oh, nah, I won't play it because they also have that.
You don't want a buddy ramp with me?
I mean, depends on if we're friends at that point in the commander game, but I might think twice about that. But other than that, like most other things. But
in all the development stage.
Yes, in all the development stage, I'm not going to stop ramping.
By the way, I'm doing the same thing. I'm ramping into this. And you know what? If you finally have this out and white is good at ramping, then, you know, we can be besties. I also like that it's a plains.
Yeah, it's not just a basic plains. It doesn't care if they have more lands than you, because that's white. A rider that keeps getting put on white cards, which kills me.
They always have that catch-up mechanic. Like, oh, you can ramp, but only up to the, you know, opponent that has the most lands.
Exactly. I don't want to be dependent on there being a green deck at the table for my white ramp to be good.
Yeah. Okay, so this gets the extra lands.
Yeah.
It even goes past other people. It gets you planes, so you can pick up a triome or a dual land or put it in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing.
So I like that. I like this card a lot. I like both these cards a lot, actually.
I like them a lot, too.
White is fun.
Well, let's round out white with one more card.
Yeah, we got Cut a Deal. It's 2 and a white sorcery. Each opponent draws a card, then you draw a card for each opponent who drew a card this way. So immediately, the immediate comparison is Secret Rendezvous from Strixhaven, where you and target opponent each draw 3 cards. It's something similar, where you're drawing 3 cards and giving your opponents advantage, except with this one, it's spread out amongst all your opponents.
I don't like it when it's spread out, though, because because I like being political. Like, if I give you 3 cards, you're also going to give me a favor.
No, like,
that's
not.
That's the way. Then you don't get 3 cards. And guess what? Josh will make that deal. He's not going to attack me for 3 cards.
Uh-uh.
Josh, I feel like calling him up right now and being like, hey, hello, will you not attack me for 2 turns for 3 cards? And he will be like,
that's true.
Deal.
Josh is known to be very greedy with 3 cards. Draw.
You can get a lot for 3 cards. And so that's why I like being able to target people politically, mm-hmm. rather than just saying like, well, all of you can have one.
Yeah, I think Secret Rendezvous, you're right. It definitely has to be played as a political piece, mm-hmm. whereas this one, which is, it's called Cut a Deal, so I don't know why it's not political, because yeah, you're not making any deals.
Good point, Murph.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I don't know why it's called that, but you're not giving one person a favor. You're saying, everyone can draw a card, and I'll get the most advantage out of it.
You have invested the card, so you're up 2 cards.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You've invested the mana, and 3 is not an insignificant amount, mm-hmm. And you've just given away 3 cards.
Yeah, but it's spread out.
It is spread out.
We were talking about earlier.
I'm excited if you play this against me. Isn't the difference
between 1 card and 3 cards pretty darn big? I think it's pretty big.
Yeah, you're right.
It also keeps fuel going for the entire game. It's not just one person, because I just like Howling Mind type effects, because it gives it to everybody. Everybody gets extra card draws. Everybody makes sure that their deck keeps moving. The game keeps going. And I think that a card like this accelerates you the most, but also just keeps the game moving, which I really like.
Do you know what I like that? Because it is better than Howling Mind, which is very equal, maybe even putting you at a disadvantage.
Because you have to spend the card in order to do it.
So I like the idea this is a way to kind of like just keep the game moving. Mm-hmm. And do you know what? You can leverage your deck around this. If you have a deck that can deploy these 3 cards faster than your opponents, then you have more ability to have board presence over your opponent's single card.
Or play this in an 8-player commander pod. Profit.
We've broken it.
We just
need more 8-player commander pods.
Yep.
We have Myriad, and oh man, we've done it, Murph. Okay, now we just gotta get some 8-player commander pods going on. Woo!
Good luck.
Okay, that's white. Plus, by the way, the Myriad cards. So white actually was doing pretty good this set. But let's move on to blue cards.
Yeah.
I want to talk about something so... Look at it. So adorable. You'll see it on screen.
Yes. But the ability is not adorable.
It's so cute.
I see it.
Look at it, Murph.
It's a Displicer Kitten. 3 and a blue, creature, cat, beast. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, exile up to one target non-land permanent you control, then return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control, and it's a 2/2.
Okay, so there are a few key words on this that make it so much better than many other cards that you might feel are similar.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it triggers on non-creature spells.
Yeah.
Is so good.
It's not just instants and sorceries. It's artifacts and enchantments, even planeswalkers.
So the thing that's really important is that it triggers off of permanence and it blinks permanence.
Yeah.
You know, so the fact that you can play an artifact and also blink an artifact is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you're not just limited to blinking creatures, which, by the way, if you're just blinking creatures, great, totally fine.
Yeah.
But this has the ability to blink tapped mana rocks, untapping them, blink planeswalkers, resetting them so you can activate them again.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big things as well, is that it comes back under your control immediately. It blinks, it comes back, kind of like a Deadeye Navigator. Ooh. Like, it doesn't come back at end of turn, it just comes back immediately. And then if you have more non-creature spells, you can do it again. And again.
I mean, comparing this to Deadeye Navigator is apt, I think.
Yeah.
But Deadeye Navigator is a broken card.
Deadeye Navigator used to be the boogeyman of our format. I haven't seen it in a long, long time.
But maybe people because used to be it like, costs 6 mana. But yeah. This little guy costs 4. Meow,
yeah, I think
costs 4.
4 mana is really, really good for this. I think this is going to see a lot of play.
I think so, too.
At 4 mana. And one thing that you pointed out to me earlier is that it can blink itself, so it protects itself. You target it with a removal spell because you're like, this thing's generating too much value, let me get rid of it. You're like, brainstorm.
Gone.
And then it comes back again. Yeah.
I think we know the power of being able to blink all non-land permanents. Like, we've seen Brago decks.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not recently. Brago's maybe fallen out of favor a little bit. For a long time, like, it was everywhere. And Brago, being able to blink a bunch of non-land permanents, was so good.
Mm-hmm.
But you had to jump through so many hoops, and it was still good. Displacer Kitten is just like, play your game, cast your spells, generate value.
Yeah, it just has so many homes. It can be an artifact decks, enchantment decks, like Spellslinger, instant sorcery type decks. Like, you're playing Magic the Gathering, you're gonna have permanence, you're gonna have non-creature spells.
I mean, that's a good point. It's not just for flicker decks, you know, it can go in a lot of different decks.
I think there's just not a lot of hoops to jump through in order for this to be very, very good. So I think this is one of the few cards in the set that has like super wide applicability, and I think we're gonna be seeing it a lot.
Awesome.
Not awesome. I don't like this card.
You don't like the card?
I mean, I think it's very good, but I don't like it.
Interesting. All right, I like this one. It's Aboleth Spawn.
Ooh, I like this one.
2 and a blue for a 2/3 fish horror. It's got flash, ward 2, and probing telepathy. Whenever a creature entering the battlefield under an opponent's control causes a triggered ability of that creature to trigger, you may copy that ability. You may choose new targets for the copy. Oh, Murph, are you playing an ETB creature?
I sure am,
DJ. I will ETB as well, thank you.
Nice.
That's you're playing Mold Drifter?
Yes, please.
2 as well, yes.
All right, okay. All right.
I mean, here's the thing. I've played Fairy Artisans.
Yeah.
Fairy Artisans is, it's a great card. It creates a creature token whenever your opponents play a creature, and a lot of times, and then that token goes away. So a lot of times, all you're doing is farming ETBs as your opponents play their different creatures. And Aboleth Spawn just does that, but does it better, because it comes down earlier, it has ward, it has flash, so you can almost guarantee that first trigger. But in all honesty, I don't think you need to flash sneak this in. I think that this is another political card. We can make a deal.
Yeah.
Murph, you're casting this Ravenous Chupacabra. Cabra, please don't target my Aboleth Spawn. You'd have to pay 6 mana for it anyway.
It's true. It does have ward.
I promise that I won't target any of your stuff. We'll both go after Josh.
Yeah. And then I'll be like, yeah, sure.
Deal.
Easy.
Deal. We've just done.
Easy.
And now my Aboleth Spawn stays on the battlefield and we get double value. Ugh. Not to mention just all the Mold Drifters in the world.
Yeah. I think Fairy Artisans is like an apt comparison because we've seen this card in play. Like, I've seen people play against it. And honestly, do people like completely stop playing ETB effects when you have Fairy Artisans out, DJ?
No, people just keep playing.
People just keep creatures. Playing their stuff.
Yeah. They're a little bit worried about playing like a gigantic creature right before my turn.
Yeah.
But like, they don't care about ETBs. I get them all.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, they might care, again, like you said, about something that would blow up their own stuff. All you got to do is be a little political about it, and people will just continue to keep playing their stuff into it. So for 3 mana, I think this can get you a lot of value.
I mean, not to mention that, like, we've talked about some. What about, like, Archon of Cruelty or, you know, Dockside Extortionist?
Oh,
you
Dockside!
I forgot about more Dockside. More Dockside talk!
So
you forgot about Dockside. Anyway.
I think people still play Dockside into this, and then you're like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whose trigger goes on first, so who gets the more treasures?
Let's see. So this
active player, non-active player,
active we're going to figure this player. Out. Whatever creature entering the battlefield under opponent's control has a triggered ability to trigger. So trigger's on the stack, your trigger goes on the stack, and then your trigger resolves first. Yeah.
So they get even more treasures.
So they get even more treasures.
So by the way, this is a May ability. So yes. If you decide that this is too much, you can decide.
You can be like, nah.
No, I don't want to do this. Like, I'm not gonna do this. So this comes into play. Previewed the deck that this comes in.
Oh, yeah.
And so I talked to Gavin about this card, and he noted that it was May ability because he didn't want people to die to
Phage.
Yeah. He didn't want people to die to Phage the Untouchable. Just have a forced thing. It's just like, I play Phage. I will copy that triggered ability and die.
I like how Gavin's making like these card choices for the corner case scenario of, yeah, but what if they play Phage?
Yeah, what if
I think it's funny.
What if they play Leveler?
Yeah, this is a great. Fun card, though. I like it a lot.
Oh, man, it's great. All right, let's move on to the black cards, and let's talk about a winner.
All right, this one is Black Market Connections. 2 and a black for an enchantment. At the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, choose one or more. Make a treasure token and you lose a life. Draw a card and you lose 2 life. Or create a 3/2 colorless shapeshifter token with changeling and you lose 3 life.
Yes, please. All, I will pay 6 life.
Yeah, because you choose one or more. You can pick all of them.
I want all of them, yes.
You pick one, you pick two, or you can pick 3. Those are your options.
So you can't choose 0.
Correct.
Okay.
It has to be 1 or more.
So if I am dying from paying 6 life every single turn, I still have to pay 1 and get a treasure.
Yeah.
Okay. But still, I'm going to pay 6. Because here's the thing. You know, we know Phyrexian Arena, right?
Yeah.
Pay a life on your upkeep and you get a card.
Love it. Good. Fallen a little bit out of favor with the commander community, I think.
Yeah.
But in general,
a really good card. This gives you the extra mana to play those extra cards. Mm-hmm. And it gives you board presence if you need to. I love that the creature that it creates is a changeling. What? So it's all creature types. So just think about this in your angel decks. Think about this in your dragon decks, triggering all those dragon things. Oh, it could be a zombie. It can be an elf. It can be anything.
Yeah, that's true. Because like in a zombie deck, you could be like, oh, well, I just need bodies. This does everything for you.
Yes.
If you're in a tribal deck, this does everything. And even if you're not in a tribal deck, this does everything.
I know, yeah.
Like, it gets you that body. Maybe in a not tribal deck, if you're not under any immediate pressure, you won't be paying the 3 life to make a 3/2, because that is a good chunk of change as far as your life total goes.
If you block a 4-power creature, you just gain some life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you don't have much of a board presence and people are pretty threatening, by all means, do it. It will pay off, almost certainly.
Your life is a resource, use it.
Yeah.
I do think that this will shine more in decks where you can have a little bit of incidental life gain. Mm-hmm. Luckily, black is good for that. You play a gray merchant, you know, you get your life back, play more of it.
Because we've seen like Sylvan Library, if you're paying 8 life a turn to do things, it's usually pretty worth it, right? And people will do that, but you only do it for a few turns before you have to slow down because they're like, okay, well, I'm starting to lose a good chunk of life. But with this, it's not even as much life. And you're probably doing it for a couple more turns as a result. And again, if you have that life gain, then you're just doing it for the rest of the game, ideally, which is so much value.
A really solid card.
Yeah,
I like it a lot. You should attack the player that plays this.
Yeah, you definitely should.
All right, let's talk about another card. Let's talk about Blood Money.
Mm.
5 black for a sorcery. Destroy all creatures. For each non-token creature destroyed this way, you create a tapped treasure token.
Yeah, this one's fun. The one thing that I don't like about it is that it makes the treasures tapped.
I don't know if I just don't like it very much in general, because I feel like if I have a board wipe, I need to be able to rely on it.
Okay.
And 7 mana means that I cannot easily rely on it.
Okay.
You know, if I want to kill the threat, I don't want to have to wait to 7 mana, because 7 mana is hard to get there. And then also, your treasures are tapped.
Yeah.
Like, one of the great things about playing a cheap board wipe in the late game is that you can redeploy afterwards. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you can follow it up with something so that you have a board presence. At 7 mana, there's very little extra mana to regain a board presence. And your treasures are tapped, so you can't even use those treasures to regain the board presence.
Yeah, you gotta wait a whole turn in order to do anything. I think this needed to have the none token clause removed, or more ideally, instead, have the tapped clause removed.
Just have them untapped, right?
Yeah.
Would that have been broken?
No. I know that we've been talking a lot on this channel about, like, yeah, but what if treasures just came in tapped? That would solve a lot of problems with treasures. Mm-hmm. And it would, but I don't think this is the card that you want to be putting tapped treasure on, because it defeats the purpose of the entire card. Because the point of the card is, I wipe the board, and then I'm the first to rebuild.
Yeah, it's a really inflexible board wipe, but do you know what? I get rewarded for playing it.
Exactly.
Like, you know, there are big board wipes out there that reward you for it, like in Garrick's Wake. You know, you don't have to rebuild because
you already have it.
Yeah, it just destroys everyone else's, but it costs so much mana that it's inflexible in that way.
I'd rather run like Decree of Pain over this or something.
Decree of Pain is, again, another really good example of that. You're giving up a ton of flexibility when it comes to wiping the board when you need it wiped, but gaining a ton of cards.
Yeah. Because oftentimes, like with a board wipe, people will have dumped their hands out, and then you, with Decree of Pain, draw a bunch of cards. Now you're the one that's in the lead. Sure, it might take an entire turn in order to redeploy, but with a board wipe and all you get is mana, mana's not...
You're kind of hoping you have the cards to match
it. Yeah, you have to have the cards to match it, which I don't love.
Some people might. I don't know. I'm not
super high on it.
Yeah, for sure.
It's okay.
All right, let's do another one.
All right. Another one. Altar of Baal. 1 and a black. It's an artifact. It's got an adventure for 3 and a black that makes a 4/1 skeleton token with menace.
Why do you sound down about that ability? That's the main thing we're talking about. The point of the card. It's a 4/1. Did you read that it has menace?
The point of the card, DJ, is that it's 2 and a black. Tap, exile a creature you control. Return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. Activate only as a sorcery.
Okay, so that's
more interesting.
I pay 2 mana for an artifact. Uh-huh. I pay 3 to activate it.
Yes.
I also exile a creature. But then I get to reanimate everything I want.
Yeah, you can reanimate anything.
And then I can...
It stays on the board, right? It doesn't go away at end of turn, which is pretty good.
That's cool.
I like that part.
It's only your graveyard.
Yeah.
Okay. People are comparing this to Recurring Nightmare, which is a banned card.
Oh, yeah.
And probably, like, a good decision that it's banned because it is so powerful.
Yeah, if you've ever played with Recurring Nightmare, you understand why it's banned, right?
But this is... so far removed from Recurring Nightmare. It has you exiling the creature, which means you can't get the churn going on.
Yeah.
You can only do it once a turn, so you can't just like spend 6 mana to do it over and over again.
Yeah, because with Recurring Nightmare, you can just play it out again, do it again.
Also, it's a lot of mana to get this started, so you're also not really easily jumping up to a really high mana cost. Like,
you know, yeah, that's true.
You know, with Reanimate, turn 2, you could have just something a giant huge creature on the battlefield, whereas this, you're not getting that as fast.
Yeah.
Your huge creature is a little bit less impactful because it's coming later in the game.
Yeah. I think the one thing this has going for it is that it's repeatable, right?
Yeah.
It's repeatable, but you can't reuse the same thing over and over, which I'm kind of glad that that's the case. But you can also only do it once per turn, right? Like, if this didn't tap, I think that would be more along the lines of what I'm looking for in a card like this.
I would like it if it didn't tap. You know, late game, I have 6 mana. Just activate. I would like that a little bit more.
Because you get some ETBs, and again, you exile a card in order to make that happen. So I don't think it's like super broken.
Yeah, the timing restriction really messes with it. I mean, one card that I've comparing it to in my mind is not Recurring Nightmare, is Hell's Caretaker, which is 3 and a black for a 1/1 horror. Tap, sacrifice a creature, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. Activate this ability only during your upkeep.
Yeah.
So creature, which makes it vulnerable, but no mana to activate, can still do it every single turn.
Yeah.
And you don't have to exile anything.
Yeah. Maybe removing the tap ability on this card isn't the correct thing in order to like tweak it where it needs to be. But I think some other like levers and dials had to be like pulled and twisted in order to turn
5/1 skeleton.
Yes. That's what would make this playable, a 5/1 skeleton.
I don't think I'm going to be playing this in my decks. If I'm reanimating fast, I want it faster. If I'm creating an engine, I want an engine that doesn't exile creatures or that I can use multiple times.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything spectacularly, which is why I think it ends up being not that great.
All right, let's move on to red.
Yes.
I want to talk about Balor.
Baylor?
Baylor.
Balor? I don't know.
Balor.
I think Balor is right. We're going to go with that. And if it's not, well, I'm sorry.
Balor is 3 red for a 5/5 demon. It's got flying, and whenever Balor attacks or dies, choose one or more. Each mode must target a different player. Target opponent draws 3 cards, then discards 3 cards at random. Target opponent sacrifices a non-token artifact. Balor deals damage to target opponent equal to the number of cards in their hand.
Ooh.
Josh, I love this card.
Yeah, so this is a really interesting one, because it's, first of all, mono red demon, which we don't see super often. Usually has black in it. Oh,
yeah, you're right.
Which I like. But also, it triggers on attack. Doesn't deal...
And death, too.
And death. Yeah, it doesn't worry about combat damage or anything like the Elder Dragons or anything like that. True, you do have to give it haste, wait a turn in order for it to do its thing.
But it comes down on 5, man.
But yeah, it comes down on 5. So I think that this is a lot better than something like that in like an average deck. So let me be clear.
let me evaluate all these different modes.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's say that I do the first one, the Burning Inquiry. Mm-hmm. You know, I randomly target you and you have to draw 3 and discard 3 at random.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that good or bad?
Oh, that's bad for me usually.
Oh, it is. But it's random, though. So it could perfectly sculpt your hand and get rid of the lands that you didn't need.
Yeah.
It could also totally mess up your hand.
Yeah. It could totally screw you.
I think that it's... Well, it also could totally screw you if I have, like, a Narset Pardor of Veils.
Please don't be that guy, or DJ.
How about a Waste Knot? I just...
Okay, Waste Knot. All right. I like Waste Knot. That's
how about Zyrus the Writhing Storm?
Now, that's a little spicy snaky one. Boys. That's spicy. I like that.
Yeah. In general, random is random. And yes, you can mess people's hands, but you can also make their hands better. But
I think you still want to do the ability, right?
But what if people in Commander have graveyard synergies, though?
Don't target the graveyard player with this ability.
It's a good device. Okay, let's go on to the next part. An Artifact Edict. Non-token, too. Yes. So with all those treasures floating around, you can't just be like, boop, sacrifice a treasure.
Yeah, I think that was very smart of them for them to
totally.
Do that.
Totally.
Because people will still have the mana rocks out, and it will hit that.
This is going to snag a mana rock.
Yeah.
For sure.
Most likely.
Like, because if you have someone with it.
Yeah, if you have any artifacts that actually matter, people will hit their mana rocks and have those go away before getting to the artifacts that actually matter. And you can target the same person every time, right? So you can be like, all right, you sacrifice an artifact. Now you sacrifice another artifact. Now you sacrifice another artifact every single turn, and just keep hitting that same person.
Keep getting into those juicy artifacts, more and more powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, this only has to get a couple artifacts where it starts competing with some of the more powerful creatures.
Yeah, I think that's the way to do it, where you want to pick which mode you're going to be targeting this person with and then continue to be targeting the person with that mode. Right. So you Burning Inquiry type effects where they draw 3, discard 3 at random.
You pick that guy because they have the least likelihood of being able to use the graveyard.
Exactly. Yeah. And pick that person again and again and again so that they're always kind of on the back foot trying to deploy the things that matter to them before it just goes away again next turn, right?
Oh, they're more likely to tap out and just put something out there and be like, because they know it's coming next turn too.
Yeah.
You're right. That could have them making suboptimal plays.
Yeah.
I'm actually the biggest fan of this last mode because... Mm-hmm. I've seen too many greedy players out there with just tons of cards in their hand.
Josh, quick.
Yeah, they're just holding 15 or 20 or just picking up their deck. And you know what? I want to deal damage equal to the number of cards in your hand.
Yeah.
I want to smash you. And then I want to just do a ton of damage and punish that greed.
Yeah. And honestly, you don't even have to be punishing people that are greedy with 15 cards. Even if they have 6 or 7, you do that a couple times, that's a big chunk of their life.
I hit you and then I deal another 5 to you? That's crazy.
That's nutty. Like, if you have 7 cards in hand, that's 12 damage. Do it again next turn, that's 24. That's
almost as much damage as the Battle Angels of Tyr.
You really like that
character. I honestly think that Baylor's good. I think that the damage is critical. You do want to be pushing through damage, or you want a big flyer demon. The artifact stuff is fantastic too. Yeah. So I think that this hits a lot of different things that I'm interested in, honestly. Oh my gosh, Josh, I forgot.
Yeah.
Turgrid, God of Fright.
Oh, with the discard at random effects?
And the sacrifice the artifact effect.
You're a terrible person, DJ. But this is a fun card. I like it a lot.
For sure. All right, let's talk about some green cards.
First up, we got Majestic Genesis. 6 green for a sorcery. Reveal the top X cards of your library, where X is the greatest mana value of a commander you own. On the battlefield or in the command zone, you may put any number of permanent cards from among them onto the battlefield. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. So that's super interesting. It's kind of like Genesis Wave, but it's not as modular. You don't get to pick what X is.
Yeah. I mean, when I'm casting Genesis Wave, I'm usually casting it for most to all of my deck. I'm wondering if I'm ever casting it for like 6 or 7 and happy.
Yeah.
I think I'm putting a ton more mana into it.
At what points do you think that you have to have, like, what mana value of Commander do you think you would have to have for you to be happy playing this?
I mean, okay, so I am happy at 10. So am I happy at 8?
Is there even a Commander at 10? There's not much.
The Ur-Dragon is at 10, right?
I thought it was 9.
9. I'm happy at 9 then.
Yeah. Play this in Ur-Dragon, profit.
Galta. How much mana is Galta?
Galta's like 12, I think.
Yes! Yeah, okay, I'm Galta's happy with good. Galta. I'm happy with other big things.
Ooh, I want to play some Galta now.
I think that this needs to be 7.
Yeah, 7 or 8 is probably.
7 or 8? And that makes it a really narrow card because there just aren't very many 7 or 8 drop commanders out there.
Yeah, the upside of this is that it doesn't say, like with Genesis Wave, you have to get X or less mana value. But with this card, you can just get any permanent that you see in the top, whatever your X cards of your deck are. So you could get Blightsteel Colossus, even if your commander is mana value 6, right? Mm-hmm. So there is that cheating of mana cost. But again, it's 8 mana. So it's kind of a lot. Yeah, I think you really want to be digging like 7 or 8 or more for this to be good.
It's too narrow.
It has a few homes, but I think it's just not generically good enough to find space in most things. I tried playing this in a Baldur's Gate draft. Didn't work. Definitely did not work.
Okay, so let's talk about a contender with Displacer Kitten
for
the cutest card.
This is pretty cute. Owlbear Cub.
Owlbear Cub!
I think this is cuter than Displacer Kitten. Displacer Kitten looks a little mean. Although, I guess this guy looks a little bit mean. Look at him. He's like staring at me, like a little bit grumpy. That's me when I wake up in the morning. Just nobody talk to me until I've had my coffee.
You're an Owlbear Cub?
I'm an Owlbear Cub. It's a 2 and a green, 3/3 creature. It's got Mama's Coming. Whenever Owlbear Cub attacks a player who controls 8 or more lands, look at the top 8 cards of your library. You may put a creature card from among them onto the battlefield tapped and attacking that player. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order.
I like cheating big things into play.
Yeah, so the cheating big things into play is like a huge draw of this. But you have to attack a player, first of all.
It's like the only draw, too, because I'm normally not playing a 3-mana 3-3.
Yeah, 3-mana 3-3, whatever. Okay. It has to attack in order to do its thing. But not only that, it has to attack a player that has 8 or more lands.
Not even mana. Not mana rocks. Yeah. Not like, treasure tokens. 8 or more lands.
Yeah, so
That's not happening soon.
You're usually probably going after a green deck that's ramped a lot. Or maybe a white deck that's now has all this new great
Terramancer.
Deep Known Terramancer. But it will take a while, even so, right? Like, for people to get 8 lands, it's probably turn 6 or later.
I want to cheat my big thing into play faster. That way it has a bigger impact. And if someone has to have 8 land for me to cheat my big thing into play, then it'll come into play and great, I'll save mana, I'll get a cool thing on the battlefield to be tapped and attacking.
Yeah.
All that's great stuff, but it's really not going to be as impactful than if I find another way to get it on the battlefield faster.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind this so much if you didn't have to attack the player with 8 lands, because the player with 8 lands... Then you
could keep doing it over and over again.
Yeah, the player with 8 lands almost certainly has something big enough on the board to be blocking this.
And that other...
Otherwise, what are they doing with 8 lands?
Well, and also, the other creature's attacking them too, so... It's not like I can say, oh, let me hit you with this little owlbear cub and then I'll send the big thing I get at Murph.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not really much you can do with this politically. No. I don't love it. I love the art, though. The art's pretty cute.
I do love the art, though. Okay, next up we've got Green Slime. Just Green Slime. It's 2 and a green for a 2/2 ooze with flash. When Green Slime enters the battlefield, counter target activated or triggered ability from an artifact or enchantment source. If a permanent's ability is countered this way, destroy that permanent. It also has foretell for green. Oh, this is interesting. So yeah. I think that we're all very used to playing 3 mana, enter the battlefield, destroy an artifact or enchantment.
Yeah, it's Reclamation
Sage. Reclamation Sage is great,
Yeah.
But Green Slime has a different mode to it where it's like it sneaks in and it counters this thing and destroys it. I can't see myself using this very often, but I feel like it's a blowout when I do.
Yeah, like a lot of the cards that we've talked about, I don't think that this card is jam it in every deck and it'll be great. I think it's definitely like narrow, little meta dependent, pretty narrow use case scenario. But for example, you could get like an Aetherflux Reservoir. They pay 50 life to take somebody out, and then you're like,
counter it,
blow reservoir. Up your reservoir. So there's definitely fun like things that. You can do with like it. Yeah, you just have to take a look at your meta and think, okay, what artifacts and enchantments with activated or triggered abilities do I really care about?
That makes sense. But in general, you're saying to people, play your Reclamation Sages sort of over this because you want that higher consistency. Play this if you want like a cool story, a big blowout.
Yeah.
You want an ooze on someone's face.
Yeah. Stuff like that. I do like that it has foretell, so you can foretell it, and then it's just a single green to unforetell or just to play it. Which I really like, because holding up a green is a lot easier to hold up than three mana.
Yeah.
Three mana is like kind of hard.
For sure. I think there, I mean, and there are situations where you'll get them, like that Aetherflux Reservoir you described, and instances where you can get someone are so much fun. So I think that the fun factor could have me playing this card.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a look. All right, next up, we're moving on to colorless cards. So we have, what are you doing? Are you making a paper airplane?
Now I am. I was just going to throw it, but now
you got to make
it. Now we're making
so while paper DJ's airplane. Making that paper airplane, we got Frayn Line. It's a 4-mana artifact, colorless. When it enters the battlefield, put a rope counter on target creature you control. At the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player can pay 2, and if they do, they put a rope counter on a creature they control. Otherwise, exile Frayn Line and each creature without a rope counter on it. Then remove all rope counters from all creatures. So that's a very long-winded way of saying, enters the battlefield, put a counter on a creature, it'll save that creature. And then it goes to the next person, and they can pay 2 mana, put a counter on one of their creatures that will save that creature. Or they can choose to do nothing, and then Frayn Line exiles everything.
I think I might just pay 2 and save my best thing.
Yeah.
And then you're not getting the reliable board wipe that you want.
Like, yeah.
Does that minimize this thing's utility?
Yeah, so nice paper airplane.
Thank you.
Very nice. Yeah, so it does minimize its, like, a decent bit, because you will be putting a rope counter on something that you care about. But then when it goes to the next person, they'll say, oh, well, this is the thing I care about most. I'm going to put a rope counter on that. And everyone's going to do that all the way until it gets back to your next turn, at which point you'll probably let it go off because you played this card. You probably want a board wipe to go off.
Yeah.
There's no reason to let it continue.
So but then everyone saved their best thing.
Then everyone's, like, yeah. So everyone saved their best thing. And the reason that you play a board wipe is because you usually want to get rid of everything. You want to get rid of the scariest thing that's on somebody's board.
Yeah. So I don't know. Does this serve the purpose that we're looking for?
I think it really depends in that the scary person has to be not the person immediately to your left. So if you play this, save one of your creatures and be like, hey, just don't do anything.
We need to get rid of the Elesh Norn over there. You tell me, like, DJ, you need to wipe the board. You need to not pay. I mean, you can if you want to, but then they're going to keep the Elesh Norn around. We got to work together on this.
Yeah, I can just be like, DJ, you want a board wipe? And you'll be like, yeah. And I'll be like, all right, Frayn Line. DJ, you're not going to pay? And you're like, no, I want the board wiped.
Oh, and it's exile too.
Yeah, and it's exile.
So now you've paid only 4 mana, kept your best creature, and you got an exile board wipe that's colorless.
Yeah, so I think that if you can play the political game with it a little bit, that this card can be good.
That's a very good scenario.
That's a very good scenario.
You gotta work to get it.
Yeah, and also if the person immediately after you is the threat, well, they're just going to not work with you probably.
Yeah. I mean, there's a chance that they're threatening because their board is wide and not, you know, a single creature, in which case it could work, you know, and they still have to pay 2, so you would be taxing all your opponent's round.
Yeah, and it's a colorless board wipe, so colors like green, where they don't really have any board wipes, maybe this finds a home, but I want to try it out and at least see how it goes before saying, nah, this is absolutely unplayable.
What if they can't pay 2?
Oh, so what I'm hearing is Armageddon, float the mana, play this, profit. They won't be able to pay the 2, and it goes off, you exiles win. Everything. And you will not have a play group after that.
I don't know. If you pull that off, I'd play with you.
Oh, thanks, DJ. Really appreciate it.
Next up, we have Nautiloid Ship. It is a 4-mana vehicle. It's a 5/5 flyer with crew 3. When Nautiloid Ship enters the battlefield, exile target player's graveyard. When Nautiloid Ship deals combat damage to a player, you may put a creature card exiled with Nautiloid Ship onto the battlefield under your control. There's a lot of things in this set that put creatures on the battlefield under your control that have you jump through way too many hoops.
So you don't like this card? Is that what I'm hearing?
No, I do like this card. It's a cool, chonky...
You said you have to jump through a lot of hoops,
it's
though.
It's a cool, chonky squid vehicle
yeah.
that hits in for five and exiles people's graveyards. That's... I like exiling people's graveyards.
Yeah.
But the thing is that on four, you're not going to get very much. You're not going to get something that you're really excited about reanimating.
Yeah.
And in the late game, then you're right. You know, you could theoretically get something really good, but then it still has to make connect, which means mm-hmm. that people are going to be really suspicious about this card, and they're going to be really wary about the your ability to get the damage through.
Yeah, I think you're right about the amount of jumps amount of hoops that you have to jump through, because you got to pay 4 mana to play it. Mm-hmm. It exiles a graveyard, which is pretty good. Yep. But then you have to be able to crew it. You can't really crew it that turn because
not an that's a pretty significant crew cost too. Three.
Yeah, three is pretty big. You got to be able to crew it with another creature that you have. You can't attack the same turn that you play it, because the second you make it a creature, it'll check. Well, have I been under this controller's controls since the beginning of the upkeep? It'll be like, no, I have summoning sickness. So you still got to wait a whole other turn in order to do it. And then you get your reanimation. And then do you think
you got to connect? It's so, yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually the same issue I have with a lot of the dragons, is that people will see this coming a mile away.
Yeah.
And if it's good enough, people will answer it. And if it's bad enough, then do you know what? That's fine. I'll still play a 5/5 flyer
yeah.
that chonks in and takes out your graveyard. So I'll still play it, but I don't have high hopes for reanimating really good things.
Yeah, I think it's hard because it doesn't do great early because there's not that much stuff in graveyards early, and it doesn't do great late because then people have stuff that can block, and also you have to play it, wait a whole turn, and then attack with it in order to do the thing when you could have just played a regular old reanimation spell.
So if you temper your expectations, because I'm not hyped on the top end, mm-hmm. if this just got a secure Tribe Elder,
yeah,
that's great, right?
I don't know if that's great. What about a Dockside? That'd be great.
Moving on.
Just play Dockside is what I'm hearing.
This is not good advice, Murph. Do you know what? I lie. It is good advice. It's just not helpful.
Hey, did you know this good card you already know is good? Play that.
All right. Speaking of good cards, what is the best card, the most powerful card, the card that everyone should have their little eyes focused on, either to put it in their decks or kill it as soon as it hits the battlefield?
Yeah. I know what my pick is. You know what your pick is?
And it's written right down here.
All right. Ready? Yeah. 3, 2, 1. Displacer Kitten. Yeah. Like, Displacer Kitten, I think, is on just a whole other power level than the rest of these cards. A lot of these other cards have more niche use scenario. They can be powerful in the right deck, but Displacer Kitten goes in so many decks, I think, that it's just far and away the most powerful.
Agreed. It's going to do some gross stuff. And Watch out for it.
In the 99 at the very least.
And you know what? You're going to try to kill it because it's on the battlefield, and they're just going to blink it out. It's going to displace. All right, Murph, what's the card that you're most hyped about?
Deep Gnome Terramancer.
Of course. It's just so good. You get those lands. If you're playing white, you're going to be playing Deep Gnome Terramancer.
Yeah. I like both and the card draw one, but I think the Terramancer is a more powerful card and one that I'm just going to be putting in more decks, because I play plenty of greenless decks that also have whites, and they might also have blue, they might also have black, other colors that are already good at card draw, but those colors aren't necessarily good at ramp, and I think that this card really helps out with that a lot.
Sounds good. I gotta go with the Battle Angels of Tyr.
You think so? That's your favorite?
That's the one I'm gonna put. That's, yes, my favorite. I'm gonna put it in the most decks. It is gonna deal a ton of damage. I'm gonna make sure it draws me cards.
I will eat my words when I die to it. I'm gonna play.
You don't have to die to it. It's gonna be my new white Mold Drifter. I'm gonna draw two cards. I'm gonna deal 24 damage. I'm gonna make a treasure to cast more spells. It's gonna be amazing.
It's a white Mold Drifter. That's what DJ said.
No, do you know what I call the white Mold Drifter?
What?
Ranger Vios. It's the white Mold Drifter.
So true.
Okay, moving on.
All right, to the listeners. What's your favorite Commander Legends Battle for Baldur's Gate card that's going to be in the 99 of your deck? Is there any card from the set that you think we missed? Remember, once more, we only talked about in the 99 here. So if there's any backgrounds or other legendaries that you're looking for, we already made episodes about those. Please go check those out. We also did the Commander Live episode where we talked about a ton of other cards in the 99. So check that out before you come and yell at us that we didn't cover your favorite stuff.
You can yell at Murph. It's fine.
Yeah. You can yell at DJ. It's fine. Yeah, whatever. I'll leave it. It's fine. All right. But before we go, we have to shout out our sponsors one last time. If you thought any of these cards were super cool, I thought a lot of these cards were super cool, DJ.
Very cool.
Go to channelfireball.com/commands. That's the best place to go to buy your singles, sealed product, commander product for Battle for Baldur's Gate. Double Masters is coming up soon. You can pre-order that stuff. Channel Fireballs, great websites where you can buy basically anything magic related from verified sellers. So, you know, you're going to be getting good prices, great service, nicely graded cards, which I value quite a bit. And yeah, Channel Fireball is just a joy to be able to shop on. So channelfireball.com/commands. And if you forget to put the slash command in the URL, just put the code command at checkout. It'll do exactly the same thing. Support the content you love and helps us out a lot. And our other sponsor is Ultra Pro. Ultra Pro has all of the deck boxes, sleeves, playmats, basically everything you could ever want or need. Ultra Pro helped make this very, very cool.
Check out the Kickstarter and playmat. Go on there
yes.
right now because you are running out of time.
We're not to the Kickstarter plug.
Lightning Tiger. But it's the Ultra Pro makes this.
Ultra Pro does make this.
Like Ultra Pro makes this stuff and they make the coolest things because yes. they make the mats and the products that have magic art on it. And yeah. they make wonderful art like this for content creators like the Command Zone. So support Ultra Pro,
yeah.
support the Kickstarter, support the things that you love, like
yeah.
Murph.
I think Ultra Pro playmats. Ultra Pro playmats are like the best. Like that's all I use. I still have Ultra Pro playmats from like, let's see, 2014 is my early days with Magic. I have Ultra Pro playmats from them that still work just fine. There's like no fraying or anything. Still function just fine as playmats. So you know that Ultra Pro products will last a long time and look good while doing it.
Perfect.
What are you looking at? You want to read the long list of names
no,
now?
No, I'm going to stall until you do it.
Okay, fine, fine, fine.
I was trying to talk in between, so then you would do this.
That's fair, that's fair. But big thanks to our amazing team here at the Command Zone. Damon Lenz, Sean Aguilis, Arthur Metacroft, Ashton Rose, Lady Danger, Manson Lug, Crank Button Chet, Josh Murphy, that's me, Jake Boss, Patrick Nan, Jordan Pridgen, Sam Waldo, Gaurav Galati, Truck Ty, Jamie Block, Mitch Trefford, and Evan Limburger. I swear this list gets longer every single time we do it.
And I'm not on the list. I'm DJ. You can yes. check me out on the Jumbo Commander YouTube channel, on Twitter, all sorts of places like that.
Yep, makes awesome stuff.
Of course, thank you. Yeah. Of course, there's also a special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the Living Card animations at Living Cards MTG.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Thank you. And thank you for watching.
Yeah.
Have a good one, everyone.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
You can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly. Which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.